All right, good morning. My name is Cody. I'm the pastor at Journey Church North County. That's North County, San Diego. It is beautiful, like Pastor Gavin said, but I'm not actually originally from San Diego. I'm originally from Oule City, Louisiana. So, you know, you're 30 minutes away and like half of you know where that's at. So I'm originally from Oule City, Louisiana, but we're actually streaming this service from Journey Church right now. So our Journey Church people are with you guys. It's a picture of the Big C Church, all of us together, worshiping together. They're watching us right now. So what's up, Journey Church? Happy to be with you guys all the way from Louisiana. It's an exciting time for us. So I'm from Oule City. My wife is originally from Nashville, Tennessee. So we met where two Southern people normally get together and meet, in Haiti. So we met in Haiti on a mission trip, and it was awesome. We were working for the same ministry. We were interning, and we met, and it was love at first sight for me and her eventually. And we got together, and we just we fell in love. We got married, and she had no idea what she was getting herself into. Because I began, and see, our church is about a year and a half old, and it only took us 10 years to launch it. So we're incredibly efficient. And so we were getting there. I'm going to tell you all about the story, all about how my life got flipped, turned upside down. If you'll take a few minutes, just sit right there. I'll tell you how I went from way over there and how we got back to here. And it was a pretty crazy story. So I want to do two things this morning. I have two objectives. I want to tell you a story about where our church came from, how it came about, how we got over there. But also, I want to ask you a question. I want to ask you a question because I think this question is something I've wrestled with my entire life, and I would bet that at some point, probably even now, you're wrestling with the same question. And the question is, what is God calling you to do? I've been confused by that question for a long time. And listen, I've had all the training in the world to try to figure it out. I was 16 years old when I first felt God call me into ministry. I was sitting and the guy was talking. He said, I feel like there's some people in here that are called to ministry, called to give their life to ministry. And I said, yeah, that's me. And so I went and I was called and I went down front. I was crying. And I knew at that moment that God had called me to ministry. But after God had called me, I had to figure out what calling meant because I really had no idea. I just felt like I should come forward and give my life to Jesus and give him my ministry and my life. So that's what I did. So I started watching people that were called. They use this word calling. I started watching them, and especially in ministry, it's kind of a weird thing because every time I watched someone get called to something, it was always to something bigger, right? So you've probably seen this, right? We get up in front, and we get up on stage, and we say, we feel like we've been called to X church or X ministry, and somehow that X church or X ministry always has more influence than the one before it. And then I started reading the Gospels to try to figure out this calling thing and what that really meant. And I started to figure out that calling usually wasn't to more influence. Sometimes it was. But usually it wasn't more to influence, but it was always, always, without doubt, a call to more sacrifice. See, when Jesus calls the disciples, he says, drop your nets, leave what you're doing. He says, leave your family and come follow me. It always involved a major sacrifice, this idea of calling. So I got this wrong for a long time. I always felt like I was going to be called to something big. It was confusing to me. So I started at Liberty University. I knew that I was called to be in ministry. And so there was a degree called church planting. There was actually a church planting degree. And in that planting degree, in that church planting degree, I was in seminary and kind of figuring it all out. Degree. Now, I read every book, and my wife can attest to this. I stayed up late at night reading every church planting book I could get a hold of. Literally, my degree was in church planting. I knew that I needed some help, so I went through this church planting organization called ARC, or the Association of Related Churches. You guys may have heard of that. And we went through this three-day assessment to get assessed. I was 21 years old at the time, actually maybe 20 during the assessment. And I remember being really nervous. And I was the youngest church planner ever passed through that assessment for ARC. And ARC was a large organization. I had done everything right like I was supposed to do it. We even prayed a little bit. And so I went through. I knew every church planning model there was. I had our model nailed down, knew exactly what we were going to do. The only task now was to figure out where we were going to do it. We knew we were going to plant a church, but where do you go about planting a church? How do you start that process? So we pulled out a map and started circling areas, because what else do you do? We were open to go wherever God was leading us. We just didn't know where that was. As we began praying about it, we felt God was calling us out to California. And you have to understand, I had never been west of, well, here. And so California was like, and my grandmother was like, hey, that's the land of fruit and nuts. Like, what are you doing? Don't do that. That's a bad idea. I was like, okay, we're probably going to do it. So I went to Sacramento for 1 week. Why Sacramento? I don't know. I went to Sacramento for 1 week, flew back to Lynchburg, Virginia after that, and had a conversation with my wife, who was my new wife at the time, and said, okay, I think we're going to plant a church in California. She miraculously said, okay. A couple weeks after I graduated seminary, we loaded up a trailer, knew no one in California whatsoever, and loaded up a trailer and went to Sacramento. Found out we needed a place to live and, you know, all that stuff. We got there to Sacramento, and I immediately kicked in with my training. I knew I had to meet people. I knew how to set up some systems. I knew we had to immediately start making disciples and get them into groups, and those groups would expand and multiply into what was going to be our future church. We got to Sacramento 3 weeks later, and the trailer, the only possession that we really owned, was stolen. 3 weeks in, we had nothing except this apartment, and that got broken into too. So spiritual warfare is real. If you don't know if that's real, it's real. And we were dealing with it head on. I also went to the hospital during that time, and I've always been pretty healthy, never been hospitalized. I had this weird ear canal infection I've never had since that time. I was hospitalized. So things were going good. We moved to California, and as my training kicked in, I started to realize this. That I was a rule follower. Which is not necessarily bad, but my following of Jesus equaled my morality. I wanted to be a moralist. I wanted to have everything lined up, ducks in a row. And I realized that that was getting in the way of actually me being a Jesus follower. I confused doing the right thing with giving up everything. And I was very confused by that. Because isn't that the same thing? Like, aren't we supposed to do the right things and line up everything and do the best that we can possibly do? See, when I was there, God gave me a vision for what our church would be one day. And Journey Church, you're watching right now, like, we get to be part of that vision together. I'm really excited about that. But God gave me a vision 10 years ago about what the church would look like one day. But see, the vision is the destination. But the faith is the thing we have to walk through to get there. And I didn't have a whole lot of that. I just want to kind of figure it all out myself. Faith is the vehicle. I figured this out, that to get to what you see, to get to the vision that God's put on your heart and on your life, you have to walk through things that you don't. To get to what you see, to get to the vision God's placed in your heart, you got to walk through stuff that you don't see yet. And you got to have the faith to get you there. And I didn't understand that yet. And so I realized this really hard realization early on, that I was a Pharisee. See, Jesus spent a lot of time with a lot of people, but the people that he really didn't want to spend a lot of time with because he couldn't really stand them that much were Pharisees. They were rule followers. They knew everything and did nothing about it. When they saw the literal Jesus Christ in front of him, they denied him, even eventually killed him. And I was that guy. I was that guy where I would go and preach on Sunday morning about how not to be a Pharisee, and then I would make sure I checked the box off about preaching about not being a Pharisee. That's who I was. See, there were three times in the Gospels where Jesus healed on the Sabbath. He would heal on the Sabbath day. You weren't supposed to do that. You can't work on the Sabbath day. But there was one that really stuck out in my mind when I read this. It was Luke chapter 13, starting in verse 15.
Here's the scenario is the Pharisees are trying to trip up Jesus once again. They've been trying to get him for a long time because they don't like this guy who's come in and healing people, especially not on the day when you weren't supposed to heal people. And in fact, there's this one time where he healed this person who had been afflicted for 18 years. He healed them, and here's what happened. The Lord answered him, "You hypocrites, doesn't each of you on the Sabbath untie your ox or donkey from the stall and lead it out to give it water? Then should not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, who Satan has kept bound for 18 long years, be set free on the Sabbath day from what bound her?" Here's the deal. He was healing on a day he wasn't supposed to be healing, but the Pharisees were more concerned about this idea of rule following than they were seeing someone be set free. It wasn't about freedom for them. It was about position. That's what it had always been about for me, was position. I'd always seen calling be a higher and higher position, and so if I did all the right things, then I would get that higher and higher position, but Jesus is literally freeing people, and they wanted nothing to do with that. And so I began to realize this in my life. I think we're quick. I'm going to jump back into the story, but I think we're quick to see the speck in other people's eyes where we say, good people don't go to heaven, and that's absolutely true. You can't be good enough. We know that. There's no thing you can do that's good enough to get yourself to heaven. Jesus has done that for us on the cross. But we're quick to point that speck out in other people's eyes, but the log that's sitting in our eyes is that sometimes good Christians aren't Jesus followers. And that God never called us to sit on a pew or sit in a chair. He always called us to deny ourselves and give up everything. That's always been the call. So if there's a calling in your life, it should scare you a little bit. And guess what? If you're a Jesus follower, there is a calling on your life. And that should be a little bit scary. And for I think for a lot of us, he's given us the vision of what to do. God's given you something about how you're supposed to follow him or the thing that he's called you to in your life. He's called you to that. You've seen the vision, but you've never had the faith to step into it. And until we do that, I think we get a little bit more and more like the Pharisees. Good Christians aren't necessarily following Jesus. The Bible talks about, Jesus talks about the narrow road and, the narrow gate and the wide road. But here's what I think. I think sometimes that wide road can be paved to the front door of our churches. It's scary. Because you're here in Houghton, and we want to reach Houghton. We want to reach the world through Houghton, right? And that doesn't happen from where you're sitting right there. It just doesn't. And here's what we're going to do. We're going to sit ourselves to death. That's just going to happen. We think we're right, and I think, and let me tell you something. I'm telling you this because I've gone through it, and I'm going through it. I have to deny my tendencies every single day. I've grown up in church my entire life. I've sat on pews for years and years and years and years, and it took me a long time to kind of start to figure out what being a Jesus follower really meant. So jumping back into the story, we're in Sacramento, and things are going great. We try to get people together. We're getting them together in groups, and we're getting ready to hopefully launch, and everything starts to fall apart on us. Every system I'd ever learned, I'd spent 6 years learning this. I'd read every book that you could possibly get your hands on in church planning, and none of it was working. And I fell into something that I never thought I'd fall into ever in my life. I was depressed. Hardcore depression. I was so depressed. Everything was falling apart around me. I remember at one point just being very vocal and yelling at God, like, God, I did everything you asked me to do. Show me somebody else who's done more to get ready to plant a church. Like, you even set up things for me. I was the youngest person to be approved of this church planting association. I've done everything right. What's going on? And so I was depressed. I was over it. And that bled into my relationship. I'm married to Kate, and that almost didn't last very long. I was depressed, and I was angry. I didn't know where my life was going. We were in California for no reason at all. And we were a few signatures away from finalizing a divorce. We were separated, living in a home together. And one day, Kate said, I'm not giving up. And she walked into an all-night prayer gathering. I wasn't there. I was at my house being angry. She walked into an all-night prayer gathering and prayed for me for a long time. That night, in the middle of the night, my heart began to soften. God got a hold of me and just said, what are you doing? This is not what I've called you to. I realized that I wasn't very faithful, but great is his faithfulness. And he saved our marriage. Through Kate, through walking into an all-night, to a church we didn't even go to, just walked into an all-night prayer gathering, and my heart softened, and her heart softened, and we began reconciling at that point. When you see the vision of what God's called you to do, you got to have the faith to walk through it, even when that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. After that time, I ran into this passage. It was Hebrews chapter 12, starting in verse 7. Endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as his children. For what children are not disciplined by their father? If you are not disciplined, and everyone undergoes discipline, then you are not legitimate, not true sons and daughters at all. Moreover, we have all had human fathers who have disciplined us, and we respected them for it. How much more should we submit to the fathers of spirits and live? They disciplined us for a little while as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good in order that we may share in his holiness. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. I realized at that moment I had the wrong training. I've been trained and trained and trained to learn everything about church planning, everything about systems and how the models and how to do it. And I had the wrong training. I went to Jesus at that point and just said, okay, Jesus, teach me. Teach me all over again. It's not about me. It's not about position. I realize now that the calling is a call to sacrifice, and I'm willing to do that. But here's the caveat, God. I'm in. In fact, I was speaking at some campuses of a church at the time. I'm in, but we're not church planning again because that was bad, and I don't want any part of it. If you've never been a part of a church plan or in the church planning world or even supported or prayed for a church planner, just know it's hard. It's really difficult, especially in places that are there's a lot of people who are far from God. The enemy will attack you and attack you in a strong way. And it was hard, and so I just didn't want any part of that. I was working for a company at the time in Sacramento, a solar company, and they were opening a new office in this place called Oceanside. We had never heard of Oceanside, California before, but my wife heard ocean, and she said, we should probably do that. That makes sense. So we moved to Oceanside, California. We didn't have any kind of plan other than we're going to help open up this new solar office. That was the plan. And so we got there, and not too long after we got there, I met a guy. His name was Jim. He didn't tell me a lot about himself at the beginning, but I came to find out that he was a church planner. And the first thing he asked me was, hey, would you come be part of our team to launch this church? And I said, well, let me tell you my story first. You may not want me. I'm a little bit of damaged goods on the church planning end, so, you know, I may not be any help or assistance to you. But he walked me through that time, and I got to be part of an incredibly healthy church plant. In fact, when I said yes eventually, because he was good at talking people into stuff like church planters tend to be, because who in the right mind, right? But he talked me into this. I forgot to tell my wife, and his wife was talking to my wife, and she said, I'm so glad you guys are part of the team. And she said, do what? Didn't we agree that this is the one thing that we weren't going to do? And I was like, yeah, but let's just try it. Because that's how things start. And Jim began working with me. He discipled me. We met every single morning at 6:30 a.m. We talked Bible. And we walked through the life of Jesus. And my heart began to soften again to this vision that God had given me towards church planting. I became the associate pastor at what is Parkside Church. Parkside just had their 5th anniversary last Sunday, and they celebrated their 200th baptism. We were so excited about seeing things that God was doing in a healthy way. So we said, this is it. This is what God has called us to. When God called us to church planting, it was to Parkside Church. And then about 3 years in this process, Jim came to me and said, I think you need to think about planting a church again. And I said, no, thank you. But I'll pray about it. So we began to pray about it, and I'll be honest, we still didn't really have an interest in doing it, but we felt something tugging at our hearts to do it. And so we said, God, okay, if we're going to do this again, we need friends with us. We can't do this by ourselves. So here's the deal, is we don't have a facility. We don't have really any plan. We don't know exactly what city we're even going to be in, but we're going to plant a church. Oh, we don't know the name of the church either. And so we presented this bogus idea to all of our friends, knowing they would say no, and they all said yes. So to some of my friends who are watching on camera, thank you for saying yes. Our friends that said yes are people who have baptized people in Journey Church, who have led other people to Jesus in Journey Church. So they said yes, and we said, okay, we'll try to figure this out. And so we began praying about it, and we said, you know what, strategy is important. There should be some strategy, but our number one strategy is to follow Jesus, because we're not doing that again. And so we just laid all of our plans down and began praying over it. At the time, I was having my team go through this book called The Circle Maker. A guy named Mark Batterson wrote this. He's a pastor at National Community Church. And he wrote this book called Circle Maker. And essentially, this is what the book is about. It's about circling your city and your area in prayer. And we said, okay, that makes sense. Let's do that. And so we began just doing prayer walks around our city and around our area. We had no idea where we were going to meet or where our church was going to be called or any of that. But at one point, there was this empty movie theater. It had been vacated for about 3 to 4 years at this point. And we prayed circles around this theater. We parked in the parking lot and just prayed circles. We had no idea who owns it or what's going on with it. We just said, let's just pray over it. 2 weeks after that, I get a call from a business owner friend. His name is Sean. He has a laser tag business. And he said, hey, I need to move this business into a new facility. I'm going to come pick you up. Will you come look at this with me and see what you think about it being a laser tag? Said, sure. He picked me up, and we pulled into the parking lot of that theater 2 weeks later. He said, I think this is going to be our laser tag. I said, this is crazy, I know, but I just prayed over this place. Is there any way we could use part of this for a church? And he said, yeah. So I went back to my team, and I said, I know this is crazy, and listen, this theater is a wreck, and it's a mess, but I think God's calling us to plant a church in this theater. 10 years before that, or 10 years ago, we had the original church in Sacramento was going to be called Journey Church, and we just said, you know what, we think God's doing something here. And we said that no matter where you are on your journey, we want to meet you in that exact place. So we called it Journey Church. We were really excited about everything that God was doing, but then we ran into our second problem, which is we looked around and we saw all these families with young kids. We have like no youth group, but we have a ton of 3-year-olds, which is fun. But we had nowhere to put them. And so we began looking all around this theater to find, can we find some place to put the kids just to take care of them, to make a semi-good facility? And I had no idea that the building next to the theater was a kids' play gym called Kidsville. Now, it's the same situation. We don't have any connection to Kidsville whatsoever. I didn't even know that it existed at the time. But I found out who the owner was and reached out a couple days later, and she agreed to Skype call with me because she was living in Serbia. So we Skype called, and she was in Serbia, and I was in Oceanside, and I said, you don't know me at all, but I'm a pastor. Well, I'm actually not a pastor yet, but I'm going to be a pastor of a building that's next to you that's a church. It's not a church yet. It's a theater, but it's going to be a church. I know this is confusing. I'm sorry. But we're going to plant a church there, and we need a kid space. You're not a Christian, are you? No. Okay. So we need a kid space for our kids. Is there any way we could rent this out from you? And she agreed, and I said, here's the other thing. We don't have a lot of money, actually very little money. Can I do something to help out and rent it for a lower cost? And she said, I'll tell you what. If you help us out with our marketing and some of our financial stuff, then you can pay less money, and you can rent out this facility on Sunday mornings. So she closed it down early on Sunday mornings. We were blown away. All of this stemmed from nothing but prayer. I don't think there's a strategy in the world that would have gave us 2 buildings in the middle of our city. Our theater is 20,000 square feet. Our Kidsville play gym next to it is 6,000 square feet. That was already outfitted for the best kids space you've ever seen. No strategy in the world would have given us that. We decided to pray about it a little bit. And all of a sudden, we had these two buildings in the middle of the city. We thought that was a pretty cool story, but that wasn't the end of it. We got into this agreement for 3 months. We still hadn't launched a service yet. We were into this agreement for about 3 months. And at that point, she called me in for a meeting. And I thought this was going to be bad. She called me in for a meeting and she said, "Here's the deal. I'm going to retire. I have two options. I'm either going to piece out all this equipment and this whole place and just sell it individually, or you can buy it from me. What do you want to do?" Now, we were all in on this church plant and really not too excited about being a business owner. We took it back to our team. We prayed about it. And we just said, is this something that's just a crazy coincidence, or is God doing this? And we decided that God was doing this. And so Kate and I basically emptied our bank account, and that still wasn't enough to buy the play gym. So we gave her everything we could, and we said, we'll pay you monthly to pay it off. God gives you the vision, but it takes a lot for him to give you the faith to get there. We have a church in a place that we didn't know existed, and we own now a business that we didn't even know existed in two buildings we had never seen or heard of before. No strategy does that. And so we bought Kidsville, and we paid large monthly payments just to try to get it paid off. And this last month, we made our last payment on Kidsville Play Gym. So Kidsville's debt-free from zero money. We thought that was a pretty cool story, and then God did a little bit more. It was a few weeks after that where Sean came to me and said, "Here's the deal. I'm opening up a new paintball park on the East Coast, and I can't manage this laser tag anymore. Would you buy that from us?" And I said, "Okay, here's the deal. We literally gave negative money to the last place." When I say we don't have any money, we don't have literally any money to give you. And I said, "Here's the only way we'll do it is if you'll just be extremely flexible with us and we'll just pay as we can. We'll just pay you what we can when we can." He said, "Okay." And so we bought the laser tag business. And the important thing about that was that we were able to take over the entire theater at that point. So now we had the entire theater and we have Kidsville Play Gym right next to each other, all because we serve an incredibly faithful God. We're so blown away, and we're still blown away by the things that God is doing. We're a year and a half old, and we were getting ready to start our first service. We were so excited about the ways that God is blessing us and figuring out everything, and we're rebuilding a theater. We're kind of from the ground up. We had to take about 10 to 15 truckloads out of the theater just to get it to ground zero and to start from the beginning and kind of rehab it and start building a stage and lighting and all the stuff you got to do to kind of get going. But most of all, we are blown away by a faithful God. So he said, we're going to launch monthly services. We're just going to do these preview services to get started, to kind of let the community know that we're here. We started with 15 people at the very beginning. We said, we're just going to start these little monthly services and try to just draw people in. We were getting ready for our first one. It was Christmas Eve. We were getting ready to launch our first preview service, and the wildfires came through Southern California. If you're watching the news, you probably remember these, that they devastated our area. And they knocked all of our church plants out of their schools. They were all gone. And they needed a place to meet. And so the very first service we did, before we did any service in the theater, is we got four church plants together, did two services in our theater. We called it the evacuation service. And everyone that was evacuated out of our area met. I just got to be real with you. When God calls you to something, it's like you won't believe the things that you will do in your life, but you got to have the faith to get there. And it's coming from a place of where I had no faith in all strategy, and God had to bring me to the depths to where I almost lost everything to show me the things that he could do that I don't have capability for. There's no capacity in me to do any of this. 1 Thessalonians 5:24 says, "The one who calls you is faithful, and he will do it." It never said you were supposed to do it. You're a conduit. You're used by God. But if you try to do it, he'll let you until you mess it up. Philippians 1:6 says this, "Being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you, he will carry it on to completion until the day of Christ Jesus." Man, if our story ended in Sacramento, it'd be one of the worst stories you ever heard. A church plant failure. And here's the thing is, when you church plant, you want people to be part of what you're doing. You tell your family, you tell your friends, you raise money. Everyone knows when you mess up. Everyone knew that we had failed. Everyone that was close to us knew that we had failed as church planters. And not only that, but most people knew that we were having a failing marriage at the time too. I think God got a hold of our hearts and changed everything. Listen, if you're a Jesus follower, if you've given your life to Jesus, there's a calling on your life. If there is breath in your lungs, there's a calling on your life. It doesn't matter how young you are or how old you are, God has called you to something. If you want to reach the world through Houghton, then you can't do it in your seat. You got to get busy. And there's going to be things that you don't expect to happen. There's going to be things that you don't see yet, but by faith, you're going to take that step because it's the only way to do it. You can do it on your own, but you're not going to see nearly the things that you could see if you had faith in Jesus to do the things that only he can do in your life. There's only one way to do this. It's to follow Jesus. A calling doesn't mean stepping up to the next step. It doesn't mean that one day I'm going to have a bigger platform. It simply means that I'm going to give up everything and see what Jesus does with it because I know it's better. I've experienced it's better. So that's the question I have, and that's it, is what's the calling on your life? What is Jesus calling you to? What faith step do you have to take to get there? It's scary. It's hard. Sometimes it involves discipline. But it says that when he uses discipline, it brings us to holiness. There's not another path. Like a refining fire, he has to consistently work on us until the day of Christ Jesus. So what is he calling you to? What's that thing that he's pressing on your heart right now? What's that vision that he's given to your life that's individual and specific to you that you've given up on? It's time to rebirth that again. Because we serve a God who is faithful, and he loves you. He's numbered the hairs on your head. He knows who you are. He knows you better than you know yourself, and he's ready to work in your life. What's that step you got to take? So God, I come to you, Father. And I just ask just on behalf of our church that is watching right now, Journey Church in Carlsbad, on behalf of First Baptist Houghton, Father God, I ask that we would just bow at your feet right now. God, we know that you do things that only you can do and no one else is capable of. That you use low capacity people to do high capacity things because of you, not because of us. Father, we trust you. We know that we don't know what tomorrow may hold or what that faith step is going to look like, but we trust you because your plans will always be better than ours. Help us today to take that faith step, God. In your name we pray. Amen.